The repair credit, when we went to closing, was our capital, our equity in the deal. And I was surprised the bank let us do that.
This is going to be a good one, guys. Before we get going, make sure you jump over on YouTube and check out the Daily Real Estate Investor channel. This episode's there on video, as well as evergreen topics on real estate investing, as well as daily shorts. Welcome, everybody. We're back for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am excited to be back, excited to bring value to you guys. As you know, this show is about pursuing financial freedom through real estate investing. We work hard to bring guests on the show that have done just that. And I'm selfishly excited about this one because the guest today is one of my friends, and he's also got a lot of real estate investing experience and a lot of different, I guess, niches, if you will. And Charles Pope, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, glad to be here. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tony, man, let's start by, what's going on with you on your end? You got anything going with your development stuff at the moment with your mobile home park, or give us the quick rundown on that?
Yeah. So we have 10 homes on order, and the first 9 pads will be completed Friday. So we're taking a drive over there to take a look at that. But it's exciting, man. It's coming along well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So Tony is developing a mobile home park right now. He's the only person I know that's doing that. And I'm enjoying watching this whole thing come together. So let's dive into Charles's story. Charles, tell everybody where you are from and how you got into real estate investing.
Okay. I live in Huntsville, Alabama, and I've been in the real estate world, construction world for my entire career, 35 years plus. I got a degree in construction. I worked in construction out of college. And after about 6, 7, 8 years into construction, I decided I want to do real estate. A friend of mine said the best place to learn real estate is to be a real estate appraiser. So I went to work as a real estate appraiser. Josiah, I know you went that route too. And I worked as a commercial real estate appraiser for about 5 or 6 years. And it was literally like going to real estate school. I was on track to get the MAI. It's very close. And it got down to the end, and it was in the final stages of that. And a bank called and offered me a job as a commercial real estate lender. So the next 12 years, I was a lender for a large regional bank in the South, doing commercial real estate, investment grade real estate. And we did apartments, a lot of apartments, office space, industrial, retail, anything income producing real estate, I did. And during my time there, I kind of gravitated over to doing low income housing tax credit apartments. For the last 7 or 8 years of my time in banking, I was in specializing in tax credit apartments. And from there, I went to work with my largest customer at the bank. And I've spent the last 10 years working for a company doing construction and development of low income housing tax credit apartments. So that's been my career. All right. While I was at the bank shied upon us as commercial real estate lenders doing real estate investing. We had a lender at one bank that I worked at went rogue and was investing with one of his customers. And so it was shied upon. So when I left the bank and got settled into my job doing tax credit developing and construction and management as well, I decided it was time for me to go to work for myself and start investing in real estate. So that's how I got started. The funny thing is that I had to change my mindset. I'm not a lot different from a lot of people. I had a lot of background and experience in real estate and construction, but I didn't have an investor's mindset on how to do it. So the first year or so, as I was trying to figure out how to do this, what to do, you know, was I going to do apartments? Was I going to do houses? I spent a lot of time reading books and listening to podcasts. And I found Bigger Pockets, like a lot of people, and started listening to how other people were doing deals. And it was a mind shift in my thinking on real estate. And I looked at it from more investment a view of it. So I started loading up my toolbox, and you know, I was looking at what other people were doing, and really learning how to use leverage and how to use compounding returns and forcing appreciation and all these things, concepts that are huge in the investment of real estate. And I learned inside out. I learned a lot of the tricks of the trade, and finally, I went out and found a deal that was going to work for me. So, you want to dive into the first deal?
Yeah, let's quickly talk about a couple things.
Sure.
A lot of really valuable stuff there. I definitely, before the episode's over, want to hit on the subject of tax credits and how that works, because that's not something any guest has talked about to date.
Sure.
But let's talk about the mindset to get going in real estate investing and the mindset that's required to make progress in real estate investing. You mentioned educating yourself on how to do this by, you know, listening to podcasts, reading books, that kind of thing. How did you get traction? How did you gain traction as you started on your journey? And how did you start, essentially?
Okay, so I started reading books, and Josiah, I remember you and I had a conversation years ago when we were first talking, and there's a book that you and I both really enjoyed and love, and that's the, can I show a book?
Yeah, absolutely, show it.
Yeah, of course.
All right, this is the book right here, Crushing It in Apartments and Commercial Real Estate, Brian Murray. Shameless plug for him, but that's the book that really impacted me the most. And what I liked about the book, he does a great job of laying out the concept to real estate, but he also gives you examples of how he did it. If I ever write a book, that's going to be my model for writing a book. But he explains cap rates, explains how to compound returns, explains leverage, all these concepts that you really need to understand. I'd say the first thing to start is invest in yourself. You got to learn this business, and you don't want to jump out there and without understanding the pitfalls and the risk and involved in this business. But the main thing you got to learn is how to make money, and you want to make money. That's your end result, is you want to cash flow. You want to force equity. You want to build wealth in your portfolio, and understanding how to do that. For me, I knew how to run a spreadsheet and run a model. I knew how to value a property. I had to learn how to make money at it. And that was the transition, the shift for me. I worked as a developer. I do complicated tax credit models, but I had to get myself down to a different level. And how am I going to leverage the bank's money? And how am I going to leverage getting owner financing and different things, tools that helped me to achieve what I wanted to achieve.
I love it. By the way, that book written by Brian Murray is one of my favorites as well. And Brian is a good friend of mine. He and I got to be friends over time. I met him at the first real estate mastermind that Brandon Turner did in Hawaii. So I met Brian. I got to be friends with him there. And Brian sent me a copy of that book signed. So that's one of my, you know, favorite things that I have that's real estate related. But Brian, if you have not read that book by Brian Murray and you're interested in specifically investing in apartments, go get that book. And we'll put a link to that book in the show notes. And Brian's been a guest on the podcast in the past. Go check out his episode as well. Yeah, I love it. Educating yourself is huge when it comes to taking this journey. And I believe that, you know, combining things like podcasts and books and then doing is the best way to get the experience that you really need. If you jump in and learn as you go, that's going to really give you the reps that you need. But you don't want to just throw caution to the wind and dive into stuff you don't understand at all, because then you can experience some big losses, especially when you're doing commercial. So let's talk about how you got into development and how you use development as an investor to build your real estate investing portfolio.
Okay. You know, one of the things that I think you should do is play to your strengths. All right. My strengths are crafting a deal, crafting the financing, and the sources into the deal against the uses. You have, you're going to have a uses cost column. That's your cost. That's the all the budget line items. And then you have to balance that with sources to pay for it. And the other side for me is my background experience in construction. And so what I was looking for was something that I could get into. I wasn't afraid to find a project that needed a lot of work. And I was looking for something that had a lot of upside potential to it. And I started looking at a number of deals. I found a deal down in Jacksonville, Alabama. It's a block from the campus. And it was kind of a mixed student housing and non-students professional housing. It was not in the student housing area. It was over in a single family neighborhood. It's like a multifamily island for zoning in a single family neighborhood, but it's a block from campus. The property had been owned by an elderly couple for years, and they just bled it to death. They were taking all the cash out of it they possibly could and were not doing maintenance. And the property was in horrible condition. But yet, location and the bones of the property, the market it was in, were fantastic. So we decided to make an offer on it. And it took a while, but finally I was able to get it under contract. And I got it under contract for $350,000. It was 16 units. And so I think, my price per unit was extremely low. Knew it was going to need a lot of work. When they showed me the property initially, they only showed me two units. They showed me the two best units. And yeah. I could see the exterior was in pretty bad shape. But once we got in and we did our inspections, we found termites. There was active termites. There was mold. Many of the units had mold. We had one unit that was completely destroyed by a dog. They had a pit bull that they kept in there and never let him out. He had destroyed the unit. So the property was in bad condition and a lot worse than what I inspected. We almost walked away from it. It was so bad. But I just kept coming back to this great location. So I went back to the owner and I asked for a repair credit. I said, look, there's active termites, there's mold. And I had already talked to the bank, and the bank had said, we want you to put 20% down. So 20% on $350,000 was $70,000. And so I went and asked for a repair credit for $70,000. I was surprised, and the owner agreed to it. And so now we're getting 16 units for $280,000. So I went to the bank and they agreed to loan me the 280, which is 80% of 350, but they also gave me another $300,000 for renovations at interest only. And so we went to work and we did a major rehab. I had to budget it myself and I managed it myself. I had subs and I had people working for me, but I managed it all myself. And it took about a year to get it renovated. And I had to pretty much clean all the tenants out. The tenants weren't paying rent. And for the rehab, they had to go anyway. So we cleared out all but three tenants out of the property. And they were all good paying, good tenants. They were faculty members. And they were paying their rent on time. So we renovated the property and we raised rent, basically doubled rents after a year based on the in-place rents. The in-place rents were at the average about 430, and we got up to around 800, and today we're at 950 there, and wow. I could go higher. So the property real well. One thing was interesting about the property is right as we were finishing up the rehab, a tornado went through Jacksonville and it destroyed a lot of the rental property in Jacksonville. So we were putting our property up for rent and all of a sudden we were inundated with people looking for space to rent. So we filled it up overnight, and which was a blessing. But the repair credit when we went to closing was our capital, our equity in the deal. And I was surprised the bank let us do that. So we didn't put any money in the property. We had zero money investment in it. It was all 100% financed by the bank. And infinite returns. And by the way, there's a great article on Bigger Pockets that about infinite returns that came to my feed yesterday. I suggest you read it. It was really, really good. But the thing that I want to caution you about infinite returns, and this article made that point, is that you got to be able to force equity in a project. You got to be, it's just like the Burr method. You want to buy, you want to rehab, you want to increase that value so you can go back and you can get it financed and you're building equity in the deal. If you're doing a deal like this, you got to be able to buy it at a point where you can rehab it and you're creating significant equity into the deal. Because you don't want to be, you never want to be 100% loan. So right now, the value that we created that property, later on we did a cash out refinance on it. It took about $160,000 on it, and we keep raising rents, and we're probably about 60% leveraged right now in the property, which is fantastic. I'd love to refinance it again. But I've got a 10-year loan at a 3.5% interest rate, and I don't want to lose.
Can't beat that. You can't.
Yeah. So we're going to enjoy the income, and so that was the first project. It's a lot of work, but it if you're not afraid of hustling and doing the work, those opportunities can be found. Because basically, the typical investor doesn't want that. They don't want to tackle a project like that. But if you're willing, and you're willing to put in the effort, you can find those deals. I doubt that you could, in today's market, you're going to be able to pay what we paid for it, but you can still find a great deal. They're out there.
Wow. That's not every day that you hear somebody start with a commercial property as their first deal. So Charles, did you see your banking, your construction experience play a part in this becoming that first deal?
It did. You know, I wasn't afraid of the deal. And, you know, the reason why we almost walked away from it, it was the time that I knew it was going to take to do that. I was working a full-time job. You know, what it did is that I went to the owner of our company and because I'd been talking to him about investing in conventional projects. And I went to him, I said, hey, I found a deal. It's going to take some work, take some time, but I'll bring you in as a 50-50 partner, you know, if you'll let me do it. And he did. And so he was my partner. All he did was sign the loan agreement, the note. But he gave me the freedom to go out and do that deal. He stayed my partner. We have three apartment complexes together now. His financial statement was a lot stronger than mine. So when we did larger deals later on, you know, it was meaningful to have him, you know, as a partner in the deal. But to answer your question, Tony, I had a lot of experience. In my job, I managed construction. I managed budget. I did contracts and construction. So the construction, I wasn't afraid of. I also, did a lot of development. And so, you put together a plan. This is key. You know, when you do a project like this, you got to have a plan. You got to know what the end result's going to be. And so, you know, what I do is I get the in-place income and expense, the rent roll, and I put together a model based on where it is today. Mm-hmm. And then I go over to another sheet in my spreadsheet, and I do a model based on, I do a 1-year pro forma or 2-year pro forma, depending on how long this is going to take. Pro forma is basically a projection of what the income and expenses are going to be in the future. And so I do a pro forma, and I go out and say, okay, well, where conservatively, I was conservative in my rents. I picked conservative rents, and then I went and I said, what are the expenses going to be for this property? And then I came up with NOI, and then I went and I found I put in a conservative cap rate, and I came up with the value. And from there, I backed out my expenses. What's the construction going to cost and the carrying cost? You have to carry you know, like I had to carry the debt service payment. I had to carry the utilities because I had no cash flow, very little cash flow coming in. So I had to carry all the insurance, the taxes, any utilities, and all those things I had to cover. And so you back all that out, and that's you also back out how much equity do I want to build? How much forced equity? I want to say I want to build 25% in equity. You back that out. That's your purchase price, right? Mm-hmm. So after your future value, the equity that you want to build in the property, and also that equity, you know, if you're going to refinance, that 25%, the bank say, hey, I'm at 75% of value. And when you go back to refinance, right? So, and you back out that equity and you back out your costs, and then boom, that's the purchase price that you want to be. I went under, I went even further under that. It's funny. I offered $350,000. I thought the owner would counter, come back, and I thought we would settle for $400,000 or maybe.
What was the asking on that one? Again,
the asking price was $600,000,
and I bought it. Oh wow!
Now, it was overpriced at $600,000.
Okay.
Yeah, the agent, the real estate agent, was a single family agent. He wasn't a commercial real estate agent, and so. That's why it sat on the market for a while, and I kept calling him and talking to him, and it wasn't moving. And finally, the owners came back and said, "We're ready to sell. Make us an offer." And I did, and I fully expected to get a counter, and they didn't counter. They accepted an offer. So, but anyway, it was a great deal. It's a great property in our portfolio today. It, you know, the market in Jacksonville, the college university there is growing just tremendously, and there's a huge shortage of housing. We have no problem keeping it.
By the way, this is Jacksonville, Alabama, not Jacksonville, Florida.
So. Yeah, Jacksonville, Alabama. Jacksonville State University is the college there. Nice community, and it's been a great property. And we have students, and it's for students. It's a quiet place for professionals. It's a quiet place. So we either, most of our tenants either students or faculty at JSU.
And how many years did it take you to raise it? I believe you said you went from 480, which was the rent when you purchased it, and you raised it up to 800 today, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, actually it's 950 today. 950. But I went to 800, and it took us a year to do all the renovations and the remodeling. And so it took us a year to go from an average of 430 to 800 in rent.
Now I want everybody to picture this. Literally, this is going from 480 to 800 in about a year. I mean, that's doubling your profits already. Now, how many units was this, Charles, again?
16 units.
16 units. You could imagine how much the net operating income was after this. And that's one of the beauties of commercial real estate. That should be everybody's goal eventually, to get into commercial real estate, because it is appraised completely different than residential. It's based off the income. So your net worth, Charles, alone went up crazy, and your partners, you know, since it's just two of you guys, went up, you know, from just that one deal in 1 year. That's awesome.
It's the power of leveraging. All right. So we leveraged the bank's money. We didn't put any of our money in there, but yet we've got this fantastic property that cash flows tremendously, and it's got a significant amount of value. We already did a cash out refinance, and I put it on a 10-year, 3.5%. Rents just kept going up. And so we kept raising rents, and we could do another cash out refinance, but I don't want to lose, like I said, 3.5% for 10 years. I'm going to sit on it and enjoy that for a while. You know, it was a major work. We had to, it was a flat roof, had to replace the roofs. We had to, all the air conditioning units, we had to fix all the, we had to take care of all the mold. You know, we put well over, you know, another thing is we put more than we kept after we've got the tenants back in for about a year. We used cash flow to continue on the rehab. We didn't take any cash flow out of it for over a year, because we just kept putting that back into the project to finish up all the rehab things that we needed to do. And I say, you know, a lot of people say quit your job in real estate. Don't quit your job. and until you're at a point where you can do it. I lived off my income from my day job, and I just kept recycling that income, that cash flow, and putting it back into the property and taking it to the completion of where I wanted it to be. And so you live off your day job and build your portfolio in real estate. That's what I've done. And you want to talk about, I know we're quick on time, we talk about another deal.
Yeah. I want to hit on a couple things you said first. The first thing, infinite return investing. What this really means, breaking this down, typically an investor is putting capital into a deal, doing some value add, and then doing a refinance and getting that capital back. So once you have all of your cash initially invested back, you're playing on house money, right? You've got your initial investment back, and all of your returns going forward are essentially infinite because you have zero invested. And this is the strategy that multifamily investors use over and over and over and over, right? It's just gotten harder to do this infinite return investing strategy as cap rates came down so much, and the multifamily craze over the last, 5 years that happened drove prices through the roof. So you're paying a lot more for the net operating income you're getting. Which made it much more challenging to do the value add, do the refinance, and get all of your capital back. So sometimes it's taking a longer hold period to pull that off. So in Charles' story, he got a great price on the front end, and then he's doubled rents. And then he refinanced out, and he's got a low interest rate. So he pulled this off at the right time because he's got a 3.5% interest rate on this deal. Well, rates now are in the 8% range. So it's much harder right now to do the same strategy. And that leads me to my next point, which is this is why right now multifamily is tough, because let's say somebody did this deal last year and had it on a 1 or 2 year renewal. Well, if his rate's going from 3.5% to 8%, his margins are getting hit really hard. So this is why the multifamily market's got a lot of pressure on it right now. And Charles's loan is on a 10-year, so he's not worried, but there are some investors that didn't do the wise thing and have a long term on their renewal period. So they're having to renew. They overpaid in the last couple years, and then their insurance rates have gone up, their taxes have gone up, the cost of renovations have gone up, and they're getting pressure because now they've got to refinance at a much higher rate and their margins were already thin. Right. So this is why they're predicting there's going to be some properties coming up for sale and there's going to be some downward pressure on multifamily prices over the next 12 months. So we'll see how all that plays out. But yeah, Charles, let's dive into your next deal that you were about to tell us about.
Sure. You know, back to your comment, I've watched over the last 4 or 5 years, and being an appraiser, Josiah, you understand this. Interest rates were historically low. You had to know that wasn't sustainable. They weren't going to stay that point. When you put a cap rate on a property, the cap rate is, people say, what's a good cap rate? And there's not an answer to that. It's a feel. You gotta have a feel for it. And, a property that's in great condition, is in a strong neighborhood, a great market, it's in good shape, it should sell for a lower cap rate than a property like what I'm buying that's in poor shape and needs a lot of work, and it's maybe a Class C property. But yet, what I've watched over the last 3 or 4 years is that when the market got tight, all of a sudden people were paying the same cap rates that they were paying for the prime properties as they were for the properties that were in poor condition. All right. When interest rates go up, cap rates go up. They're directly tied together. When interest rates go up, a cap rate's going to go up as well, because the returns, when interest rates go up, the returns go down. An investor wants to maintain the same return, so he's going to pay less for that property. And so a lot of people that were bought these properties and put them on a floating rate and expecting, hey, we're going to do this work, and in a year, 2 year, 3 years out, we're going to refinance out, or we're going to sell it, and boom, interest rates went up. and they're not going to get the price that they were expecting to get. And instead of doing a cash out, a lot of investors are going to have to do a cash in, or they're going to take a hit. They're not going to be able to refinance it at the 3% rate that they were looking at a year and a half ago, and they're going to be at 8%. It's not going to work. So I'm interested in seeing where this falls out. I think that there may be some buying opportunities, but who knows? The oddly thing about it, I really haven't seen that on a wide scale. I've seen a few properties where investors needed to get out of it, but I haven't seen that on a wide scale yet. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But the point in all this that you need to remember is you got to manage, think about interest rates. You got to plan for it. And I think a lot of people jumped in, didn't have a lot of experience in this business. Everybody's doing it. They didn't plan for the risk of an interest rate, which is a real risk. And we're seeing that right now. You know, everybody, when things are so good, everybody should have been locking their deals up on long-term loans with interest rates at that point.
I totally agree. And that is precisely the reason that on my own portfolio in 2020, you know, we had 20 rental properties. I would say they were all B-class rental properties. Probably the average property was worth $250 to $350. These were in Fort Worth, Texas, and we had done the burst strategy on all these and built in a good bit of equity. These things, I mean, the values on these just went crazy. And so we had a lot of equity. Our rents didn't really go up that much, but we were looking at our portfolio and we're like, we've got several million dollars of equity here. And if we sell these and do 1031 exchanges over into vacation rental cabins, this would more than 10x our bottom line portfolio profit. And we could lock these in on long-term, low interest rate, fixed 30-year conventional loans. And that's what we did. And so we have loans in that portfolio at 4%. And the current, you know, the current loans are going at 8%. There's all these really high points, and the lender's appetite for these has gotten a lot more conservative, right? So we took that opportunity to lock in the low interest rate, long-term fixed financing for 30 years. That's what I love about some of these residential products. On the commercial side, it's harder to get the long-term, you know, tell us about that, Charles. That's something that I'm not as experienced in. When you're looking at, you know, locking in a loan on an apartment, I know that you can get longer amortizations just like residential, but they typically have renewals, right? So talk us through what a good, like if you're buying a property today, what kind of term you're looking for on that?
Okay, it depends on the size of the property. And
if let's say it's 125 unit B-class property Birmingham.
Let's give you an example of a property that I bought. And I'll walk you through, because I just did a long-term loan. I can explain the loan to you. But in Anniston, Alabama, I found a property. I was looking at something to buy, and I was actually had another property that I was targeting, and I was doing market research. I was just calling other properties, checking rents and occupancy rates, and just trying to learn about the market. And I called a property, and the interest rate, I mean, the rental rates were much lower than the market rates. And I asked the manager, I was just floored. I said, why are your rents so much lower than everybody else? And her answer was, where our owner has owned this property for 40 years, and they're good with the rates. They got low debt, and they're not interested in raising the rents. So I said, can I have her phone number, the owner's phone number? She wouldn't give it to me. So I found it, and I called her, and I got the story. And what happened was they had owned it, or her husband had owned it for 40 years. His health was in bad shape. And so he was not able to manage. And she'd been basically running the property for about 10 years. And she was just babysitting it. And she did a really good job of maintaining the property, keeping everything fixed and taken care of. But she did not raise rents. And so her situation, she couldn't sell it she would, because she did, her husband would have a big capital gains tax. And so she said, I'm going to wait until my husband passes and then I'll sell it. And well, about 6 months later, through a friend of mine, I heard that her husband had passed. And so I waited a month and I called her up and I said, hi, my name is Charles Pope. We talked about 6 months ago, and I was wondering if you'd be interested in selling your property. She said, I'm so glad that you called. And so I said, well, could we meet and talk? And this was on a Thursday. She said, yeah, can you come to my house on Saturday? And I said, yeah. So called my wife. We had plans for that Saturday. I said, we got to scratch our plans. We got to go meet this lady. Because we've been praying about this for a while, that this is the one that we really felt like this is an opportunity for us. So we went to see her. It was last minute. We had my kids with us because, you know, we had an event, a family event. Everybody that we would typically use to keep our kids were going to the family event. And so we brought our kids with us. We knocked on her door. I had three kids with me. They were 13, 11, and 8, I think, somewhere around there. So they're younger kids. We walked in and we sat down with her, sweetest lady, and I introduced my family, and I told her, she was asking us about our family. I told her we homeschool. She said, she lit up. She said, I homeschooled my kids. And back when nobody was homeschooling. And so we had a connection. She loved the Lord, which I love the Lord. And that was a second connection. And I just gave her my story. I said, look, I'd like to buy your property. And I pointed to my family. I said, this is the reason why I want to buy it. I want to buy this property so I can build an income to the point where I can eventually step away from my job and spend more time with my family with things that are important. She loved it. So we sat down and we worked out a price. I made her an offer and she countered and we came to a price. And from there, I went back to my partner. We bought this for like $4.3 million and some change, 101 units. So we're at $43,000 a unit on the purchase price of our 101 unit property. The rents there again were low. They were in the average rent was about $450 at that time in the market. The average rent was about $700, and so I went back to I knew my financial statement was not going to be strong enough for me to get the financing. So I went back to my boss and said, "Hey, I found this property." And said, so he agreed to be a partner in it with me. So in negotiations with the seller, I asked for $500,000 in owner financing, and she agreed. So we set that up on a 2-year note. I had 2 years to pay it off. So what that meant that I had to increase rents and the NOI over the 2-year period, where we could refinance and take her out of the deal. And so we bought it. The property was in fairly good shape. You know, it was in really good shape. We did have some things that we needed to do. With the bank, I also negotiated a $500,000 interest-only loan for renovations. So right off the bat, we replaced every air conditioner. Air conditioning units were old. So 100% air conditioning replaced. And we replaced the balcony railing because got to the point where they were not safe. So we replaced all the metal railings on the balcony and secured that. And then we did some other things, but we started renovating the units. All right. So here again, I have had a $3.9 million loan from the bank for the purchase. Our equity was owner financing the $500,000. And then on top of that, we had a $500,000 to do renovations with. We didn't have any money in the project again. Once again, $0 in the deal. And so immediately we raised rents. And I raised rents up to an average about $600-something. We were still below the market, but I didn't want a mass exodus from the property. So we had a big increase, but we didn't go all the way. And we started renovations. So a year into the deal, And we, the property was full. So we were having a lot of cash flow in. So a lot of the unit renovations we were doing out of cash flow. Cause if I didn't need to use that, all that $500,000 debt, I didn't want to. And so we were using our cash flow to do a lot of the renovations. Well, a year into it, the owner called and she said, "Hey, I need that money. There's something I'd like to buy. You know, could you pay it off, the loan off, a year early?" She said, "I'll give you $25,000 discount off the repayment if you'll pay it early." And so I said, "Okay, I got to figure this out." All right, I had $250,000 left on the construction loan, and we had amortized probably about $25,000, and then I had we had some about $60,000 in cash flow that we had accumulated. And so what I did was I put all that together, and I went and got a second loan based on we'd raised rent. So the value went up. So we were able to get a second, we got another appraisal, just did an update on the appraisal, and we were able to get a second loan, second note on the property. So I was able to raise the 450 to, or 475, actually it's 450 because we had about 25,000 amortization over that year. And so we took her out. Now, the interest rate at the time of the bank was cheaper than what I was getting from her. You know, she was charging me a 15-year amortization and like a 6% interest rate. So it worked out better. Worked out better because now our interest rates were I think at the time it was probably around 4%, and we had a longer amortization. We had 25-year amortization on the loan, so it worked out. So now we're not beholden to her anymore, but we're in the deal once again, completely leveraged with none of our own personal money in it. And so from there, all the rehab came out of cash flow. So we continue to turn unit. We have rehabbed 100% of the units now, new appliances, new flooring, LVP flooring. We updated countertops as needed, vanities as needed, lighting. Oh, all right. So back to your question, Josiah, about financing. So our goal for this property is to put it on long-term financing. And there's a number of options. You have HUD, you have USDA. So there's products like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. And then you have the a HUD 223F loan, which is a refinance loan through HUD. That's the option that we chose. It's a 35-year term. It's a 35-year amortization. And so it's, you know, 35 years term, it's locked up.
That's
for
great.
35 years amortizing, and we're at 4%.
No renewal.
Do what?
No renewal.
No renewal.
Yeah, 35 year. Up. And that's what kind of product?
It's a HUD 223F loan.
And what do you have to do to get qualified for that?
All right, it's a lot of work. And that's the drawback. It does take a lot of work. It took a long time, a year or so to get there. I was trying to do it during COVID, and COVID created some issues there. Interest rates got down in the twos. I was hoping to get a rate at the twos, but there were so many people trying to refinance. They had a backlog, and it just sat in their queue forever. By the time they got to mine, interest rates had come up. I ended up locking it at 4%. But the things you got to do is, you know, if you're going to lock it up for 35 years with the low interest rate, and the government wants you to fix everything. So they came in and said, okay, they did an inspection and they gave us a laundry list of things that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. All right, we had already replaced the roof. We replaced the roof, but they came back and say 50% of the hot water heaters had been replaced. They said, you need to replace the other 50%. All right, we replaced 50% of the windows. They said, you need to replace the other 50% of the windows. And they wanted us to fix cracks in the sidewalk. And you know, there were some electrical things that had to be done. You know, just a whole list of things. So we went and we had to fix all those things. We did that through cash flow. And so it took some time for us to, so we weren't pulling any money out of it. We had this big 101 unit property. All right, so a lot of people say pay yourself first. That's a big thing I'm hearing in books and things like that. Delayed gratification. You know, Dave Ramsey says live like no other today, so you live like no other tomorrow. I think it's a great saying. So I lived on my income from my job, and I worked on my property to get it to where I want it to be. It's locked up for 35 years. It's an annuity right now. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm going to get money from it every year for the rest of my life.
Well, right? When you want to sell that, call me first, because because I want to keep that financing in place. Yeah. So I'm dead serious. Just remember
there's value in that financing. If we were to put it on the market today, you know, we could get a premium price because of the interest rate on it.
Yep.
But, you know, for me, what I was looking for is I wanted stability. I wanted to know I had something that's, you know, so this is my base for my living for the rest of my life. All right. So, you know, I'm getting good income on it for the rest of my life, and it's set. We had to put it when we had built a lot of equity. We got the rents up. The average rents are now, 800, 8.25. And we could go up. We're about to go up again. And so we cashed out when we refinanced. We got a total of about $800,000 cash out refinance, and it's humming on the cash flow.
So I want to tie all this together real quick before we go on to the tax credit section Tony's going to talk about. But you bought this deal and used, again, a seller credit, right? For the equity. Owner financing. And then you did seller credit on the first deal you told us about.
Yes.
Owner financing on the second. So you literally put none of your own money in. But then you went and did the reno, and that money was coming from, was that coming from your pocket or coming from a loan from the bank?
All right. The renovation came from a loan from the bank.
Okay.
$500,000.
Interest only.
$250,000 of that.
Yeah.
And then I used the rest of on the property. Rest of I used to buy out the owner financing.
Now, were you using your cash to pay the bank loan, or were you using cash flow?
Cash flow.
So literally you put none of your own money in this whole thing again.
Zero money. So this is
another infinite investing, infinite return example. But and then you increased the rents while this property was completely occupied. So the cash flow was great. And then you were living off of your income from your job and plowing the capital, the profits that the property's kicking off back into the business. And you talk about delayed gratification. And that to me, I heard someone talk about this the other day. I think it was Alex Hormozy, but he was talking about, if you show me someone that can delay gratification, like they've done these experiments where they take two kids and they tell one kid, you know, they say, you know, here's a jelly bean. If you eat this jelly bean now, it's gone. If you wait for an hour, you get two, you know, and two kids, one kid will eat the jelly bean, the other kid will wait, you know? And then they said, you know, you do it for a day and say, here's a jelly bean. If you wait till tomorrow, you get 10. And he said, the kid that waits till tomorrow, that kid will be very successful. And that to me in investing, delayed gratification in real estate investing is everything, right? Like in my own life, my business partner and I, we worked for 5 years tirelessly. I mean, through deal after deal and problem after problem after problem, so much stress, and took zero out of our business. And we were living off of our own income, plowing everything back into our business. And now today, my business is kicking off a lot of profit, and we've been able to streamline it, create some systems around it. But if we had not delayed gratification, if I had been living off all that profit when it started, there's no way I would be where I am right now. Charles, your story is the exact same way. You've reinvested profits and updated your properties and gotten them to where now they are paying for your lifestyle. And that same story is in Brian Murray's book that we talked about earlier. I specifically remember him talking about going out there, sweeping the grounds, picking up trash, renovating his property, putting all the profits back into the property to get the properties to where they are. And then one day you get to a point where you can do a refinance and you can take out $1 million and it's tax-free because it's a refinance, and you can live off that $1 million. And you know, but you got to delay your gratification to the point where it lets the property stabilize and increase in value enough through rent raises and value add that you actually can one day take that profit, you know? So I love that.
Yeah. That's why I say don't be in a hurry to quit your job.
Right.
That's another, you're leveraging your job, just like you're leveraging the banks, you're leveraging owner financing, all these different tools that you can use. You're leveraging your job to support your family, your life until you get to the point. For me, I started this, I was at age 50, and my goal, I didn't want to work till I was 65, 62. 60. I wanted, you know, I didn't know when I wanted to quit. I loved my job. And we could talk about that too, if you want to. I loved my job. I did real estate every day in my job. Now, I was an employee. I got a W-2. I did get some bonuses and things. But, you know, what I came to realization years ago is that I was doing a lot of things in real estate and construction, and I was earning an income from it, which was great. But I wasn't the guy that was getting the real money in it. You know, somebody else was doing the deal. They were
making somebody else rich.
That's right. I was making somebody else rich. And so it was time. I came to the point. It's time I did it for me. All this experience and knowledge I have, I had to do it for me. Like I was talking about, there was a shift for me where I had to change my mindset on things. And, but it's doable. And it's, you know, I can go the next property I bought after this one, you know, we put equity into it, but guess where I got the equity? When I refinanced the second loan on Greenbrier to pay off the owner financing, I also added $118,000 to that loan on Greenbrier, which is a 101 unit property, which I used in equity to buy a third property. So reality is I have a third property. I didn't put any capital in it.
That's the stack. That's the stack that Robert Kiyosaki talks about in Rich Dad Poor Dad. You invest in assets, you reinvest to buy more assets to pay you to build the lifestyle that you want to be financially free.
It's the velocity of money. There's so many terms for it. Velocity of money, you know, the recycling of money. So this property, once again, it was a big rehab project. I didn't get as well on the financing. I didn't get as much loan on it, but we were able to go in and on the front end and fix the things that need to be fixed. And we raised rents. And then took a lot longer. It took about 3 years for us to do all of the renovation, but we did it all from cash flow. This is a 24 unit property, all from cash flow. All right. So this past year, we finished it up. There's still some minor things we're going to do, but I'm still raising the rents on it and getting them to where I want it to be, but now we're getting cash flow on it.
And all of this is still with a fixed rate. That's what people don't, you know, you have to, it doesn't, you know, you're making more money every year in it because your debt product is a fixed product.
Yeah. So the 10 year terms, you know, on the big one's got a 35 year, but everything I put on the longest term I could get, 10 year term. And I'm 3.5%, maybe 4% on the interest rates. 25-year AM. The thing is, for me, if I can't force appreciation, if I can't create value in it, and I'm not getting cash flow on it, it's a non-starter for me. If I can't do those two things right off the bat, if I can't leverage in some way, I don't mind putting. I bought a lot of houses and duplexes too. And I've done the Burr method over and over and over again. And was able to buy something, renovate it and refinance it and pull all my equity back out and go buy another one. And that's recycling your money. I have 182 units now total. I've got a property now that I bought in Arab, Alabama, and it's a mixed use property. It's 12 apartments, 11 office spaces, and a warehouse. This office space, you're just renting an office with shared common areas, bathroom, break room, and stuff. And so I'm right now in the middle of the renovation on that. But when I bought it, I got owner financing for my equity, and I And then I got a bank loan for the rest of it. So at purchase, I didn't put any money in it. Now I'm funding the rehab myself. So I'm doing the rehab out of pocket. And so I am putting money into it through the rehab. But, you know, the deals, it wasn't, you know, completely like I did the other ones. It's just because, you know, banks changed. They weren't really willing to do those deals anymore. That's another thing that you got to understand about the banking world. The banking world is like a pendulum. And you have two sides of a bank. You have one, you have the credit side. You have the other is a sell side. And it's built on this basis of, when I was at the bank, it was explained to me, positive conflict. You know, you got one side that wants to protect the bank and making sure they're getting solid assets that are safe and secure. The other side is trying to get out and sell, and they're trying to make money for the bank. They're selling debt. They're selling all these the different things they have for lending and deposits and different things. But somewhere they got to meet in the middle, and they kind of conflict, and they agree, all right, we're going to be somewhere in the middle. And so, but what happens is, over the last 5-6 years ago, the banks were sell, sell, sell. So they shifted over to the sell side, and they were willing to do a lot more deals. They're, you know, hey, we got to be competitive in the market. So they relaxed on a lot of things. All right, right now we're seeing a situation where the banks are swung over to the credit side. And now they're being much tighter. You know, for case in point, you know, I've been buying houses and things and doing those. And I went from getting 85% loan to value to 80%. Of course, interest rates went up, and just the terms tightened up. And now they said, we want you to have skin in the game. Well, I've been doing deals without putting skin in the game. And all right, so now I've got to put money up front. All right. But then just this past month, I bought a house. I bought it with cash. I went back to the bank, who has helped me tremendously in the past and a lot of loans for me. And I wanted the loan. So, yeah, we'll do it. They ordered the title, they ordered the appraisal. I went and bought it with cash. And he said, bring me the warranty deed. I brought him the warranty deed and I said, let's close. All of a sudden, there's a delay and there's delay. There's crickets. I'm not getting any answers. And finally, I called and he said, we're not going to do the loan. And really, there was no explanation. You know, there's no good explanation for why. I guess the bank decided, you know, they had enough with me already, or they just got concerned. And so I had to go find another bank to do the loan. But the banks will shift. And, you know, they just, you know, their bucket will get full with a certain property type, and they'll turn off the spigot, and or they'll tighten up on their terms. And that's what we're seeing right now. Not only interest rates are going up, but the banking terms are tightening up. And but I will say this, you can't let that deter you. You can't get upset about it. And you can make money in real estate in all markets. You just got to figure out how to do it, and you got to adjust, and you got to pivot. Interest rates are high. It's hard to make deals work. So that means more important on buying it right, coming up with different ways to do it. One thing that I've done is I've started doing midterm rentals, and I'm able to get a higher rental rate. And I know you just had a lady on your last session, and that's what she's done. And it's a good, you know, I've had, with one of our property, we've had furnished units for, I bought it. It had furnished units. And I think I need to get rid of these, but then I realized, hey, they make money and good money. and so I've taken that model and I've put it in some properties that were marginal at 8%. And I'm in, hopefully that's going to work and it's going to do well. But
can I just point something out?
Yes.
I think honestly, for our listeners, I want you guys to listen to this. Charles, you said you started this when you were 50 years old. And then at the same time, your financial statement was not as strong that you had to reach out to partners in order to get some deals work. And the reason why I mentioned this is because, the average person says, hey, you know, I don't have any money. I didn't have a wealthy family. I didn't have a mom and dad that can loan me $1 million, or I don't have the experience, or I'm too old to invest. First of all, those are all excuses, as you can see in Charles' story. I just want to point that out, that you don't need, you don't need a fortune to get started in real estate. All you need is consistency, education, you know, on yourself, just investing in yourself as a whole. And, but yeah, Charles, that's something I love about your story, because it eliminates tons of excuses that newbie investors or people that are trying to get started investing always make. Now, before we get, you know, to the final portions of the podcast, I did want to talk about the low income tax credit apartment.
Sure.
From the investor side and from a tenant side, I'm not even sure how that works.
All right. Let's start from a technical side, how it works. All right. So the low income housing tax credit is a great program. It's a partnership between the government and private individuals doing apartment complexes. Basically, the government has realized we need a housing that's affordable for low-income tenants. And what they mean by low-income tenants, they're looking at people that maybe they're working, they have jobs, they're working, but they make a lower income. They're making, you know, $40,000 to $20,000, or and sometimes even less, a year in income, and then maybe they're just starting out, or maybe they're elderly on a fixed income. There's just not enough housing for those people. And so what the government has done, he said, is if you will agree to rent these properties at a certain rent level. And so maybe it depends on the market. Well, I'll give you just a range for Alabama. It may be $500 to $700 a unit, depending on if it's one, two, or three bedrooms. It mm-hmm. changes, and it's based on your income. A tenant has to income qualify. They come in and they provide their pay stubs, and we verify that they're making a certain income, and they can live in that property. All right. So if you were to build conventional apartments today, rents are going to be $1,200, $1,300, $1,400, $1,500 a unit. The vast majority of the people can't afford that rent. All right. So particularly people that are making, you know, $15, $20 an hour, they're not going to be able to afford that rent. So, and they need housing. So what the government does, they have a pool of dollars, which they award as tax credits. We apply for those tax credits. It's extremely competitive. It's a business. It's hard for an individual to break into to be a tax credit developer. It's very complex, but we apply for those tax credits, and you know they score us. They stack rank you on based on your scoring and your location, and then you're awarded credits. All right, those credits. Say for instance, you had a project that's going to cost, just for round numbers, we'll say today is much more than this, but I'll say $10 million, and you're going to do 48 units, we'll say $15 million, and you're going to do 48 units. All right. So if you were to go out and get a conventional loan to a conventional property, you're going to have to come up with about 25% of the equity to do that deal. All right. Tax credits provide the equity in a low-income housing tax credit. So what they do is they award you these tax credits, and you take those tax credits and you go and sell those. So like on a $50 million project, you may get $1 million in credits. And mm-hmm. so you go and sell those. You may get $1.2 million in credits. You go out and sell those in the marketplace, and people like banks or companies that have a really high tax burden, they'll buy those, and they can buy those at, right now the price is about 85 cents on the dollar. And so that 12 million, you're getting $1 million, that's equity into the deal. And so now you only have to go and finance the balance of the cost. All right. So that allows you, since you're getting all this equity in the deal with the tax credits, you're able to finance the balance of the loan you're able to have the lower rents because the rent services the debt. So you got to have a smaller debt that is serviced by the rent. So you have to sign a what's called a land use restrictive agreement or covenant, a LURA, a LURC, that goes with the property that says you'll keep the property in the program for a long time. And right now, it's all about points to basically lock you in for 35 years today that you agree to stay in that program. Where you make the money, where the developers make the money, is on the developer fee up front. There's a pretty significant developer fee. Then you have an opportunity to build it so you can make money. So the company I work for, we were the developer, we got the development fee, we were a general contractor, we got the construction fee. We also did management, so we got the management fees, and then we also had an in-house civil engineering group, and so we got fees on civil engineering. And so that's where we made our money. On the cash flow, you really don't make a lot of money on the cash flow. You make all your money up front. You make some on cash flow, but it's not a lot. But anyway, you have to keep the rents at a certain level based on their income. And so for today, there's a small pool of investors, developers that can do that. You get points for experience. And so somebody comes in brand new, they're not going to beat the guy that's been doing it for years and years and years. But one, because of the experience point. Two, because it's a game. They know how to play the game. And but what we're seeing right now is a lot of these properties are coming out of their compliance year, their 15-year compliance. And so the owners can do they can sell it, and you can do what's called a qualified contract on the property. And that allows you to take it out of the program. There's a lot of steps you got to take to do it. And it takes about 4 years to go through the full process. But a lot of people are taking these out of the program and turning them into conventional properties. You see a lot of people buying former tax credit deals and taking them out of the program. That's going to dry up because the way that the plan works now, the agency said, we don't want you to take them. And so now to get points, they make you agree not to do a qualified contract up front and make you agree to keep the program in 35 years. So right now you got a window where you can take those properties out and actually buy those and convert them to conventional. And but anyway, that is it's an opportunity to provide new quality units for people that otherwise wouldn't be able to afford them. Now let me say something, and this is key. All right, think about, you can develop new tax credit properties and the rents are going to be in that low range. You can develop new construction, the rents are going to be extremely high, $1,300, $1,400, $1,500 with today's cost and interest rates are going to be way up there. The sweet spot is in the middle between when you get to that 800 to that 1,100 range in rent. There's no avenue to build new product. There's zero. All right. You cannot build new construction. It's not feasible at those rental rates. And so that's where I have planted myself, because I know, people, that's the biggest market. That's where most of the people are, where they want to rent. There's no new product coming online. And so that's what I'm buying. I'm buying them. I'm holding them. I'm not a flipper. I do sell. In fact, I'm thinking about selling a property now, but I don't sell. I hold. And because there's always going to be demand there, and it's not going to go. People got to have a place to live, and there's nothing new coming online. So if you could plant in that middle area above the low income and beneath the new construction, and the demand is going to continue to soar because our population is increasing, but properties are deteriorating, so the number of properties are going to go down, and so that I think that for a long term investment, that's the place you want to be, because there's always going to be a need and demand for those.
Love it. This has been This has been a really, really phenomenal episode. I feel like you need to write a book, Charles. And I want to close out by bringing this all together for the listeners and making this have real life application to things other than real estate. So last time we talked, Charles, you shared recently you've been going through some health stuff, and you said you'd be happy to share this. But I want to talk about how these investments that you've purchased that are paying you now have helped you get through that, and then we'll close out our show.
Sure. Everybody knows COVID. About two and a half years ago, I got COVID. And for me, COVID never went away. And I have what's called long COVID. And I've been sick for the last 2.5 years. And for me, it's fatigue, it's muscle weakness, it's body aches, and it's brain fog. And some other things too, but those are the main four. I go for periods where it knocks me way down. So I've tried to work through it. About a year ago, I came to the conclusion that I need to step back from my job. And I went to 3 days a week. And all this, during this time, I'm trying to do real estate and my job and take care of my family. And it was just hard, because basically I would get 4 or 5 days out of a week that I was fairly functional. But then there was a couple of days where I had to go just where I have a deep rest, because I would run myself ragged for 4 or 5 days, and then I would just crash for a couple of days where I had to rest. Basically, I wasn't doing anything well. I wasn't doing my job well. I was not doing the real estate up to the level I wanted to do it. It was affecting my family. It was affecting my health. I wasn't able to do the things I needed to do to get healthy. I wasn't able to get the exercise I needed. And also it impacted my relationship with the Lord too. I just wasn't able to spend the time with Him that I wanted to spend. So my wife's been pushing me to quit. I love my job. I love what I did. I love doing real estate, and there's no better investment than real estate. And I had my personal stuff, but I was also had a meaningful position at my job, and there was opportunities there. The doors were opening up for me to get better in my job. And there's been some changes that were going to allow that. But at the end of the day, with my wife's encouragement, I realized I needed to step away from my job. So this summer, I finally retired from my job. And I was able to do that because of my real estate income. And 6 years ago, I didn't have any real estate income. And 6 years later, we can live very comfortably just off my income from my real estate. And we've built tremendous wealth too in our real estate. I have a lot of leverage. I'm very low leverage. So there's a lot of money that's sitting in my real estate that if I needed, I could access. I was able to leave my job. I'm focusing on getting healthy, focusing on my family. I'm focusing on my relationships with the Lord. And I'm still have a consulting relationship with my company, and that's worked out good. I spend probably, I don't know, 10 hours a week. You know, it's going with them. It's probably going to kind of wax and wane. And, you know, when things heat up during application season, I'll get busier. And there'll be some times where I do very little with them, but you know, I always have the opportunity to go back too, but the reality is that you never know where life is going to take you. And if I had not ventured out into real estate 6 years ago, I'd be in a mess right now and trying to figure out how to support my family and maintain our lifestyle. I just praise the Lord for Him. You know, at that time, I never knew what life was going to take me, but I'm thankful that He gave me a desire, gave me the abilities to venture out into this business. And I see right now, you know, it was all by design. You know, He put me in a place where I can provide myself for myself. But at the same time, and I know, guys, this is something is dear to y'all, but I have an opportunity to bless others and be involved in ministry and support ministries and be compassionate. You know, there's a lot of times in this business where I've had the opportunity to be compassionate, you know, to a tenant or to a contractor or one of my employees, or even, you know, somebody totally unrelated to real estate, just because, and I'm able to do that through the benefit of my real estate business. I don't take that for lightly at all. And I thank the Lord every day for it. And I pray that I can get well. I haven't shut down my business. I slowed down. I bought a project last fall, and I'm working through that. A big project. I've been steadily buying houses and duplexes and things. I've got a team, a system of people down in Calhoun County, where in Talladega County, where I invest, and I've got a contractor that works for me full time, and I manage. I go down there once every 2 or 3 weeks. I manage it over the phone, manage the process, and they're doing it for me. And I'm thankful for them. I take good care of them. I pay them first. You know, I make sure that they're paid and they're paid well, and that their work is meaningful for them. They love working for me. It's been an incredible journey. I love real estate. You know, the greatest thing about real estate is fun. You know, it's like playing a game. It's fun. I love the art of a deal, putting all these things together to craft something that's going to generate money. Anyway, that's my story. And I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a blast. I'd love to do it again. If you want to talk, anytime you want to talk detail on concepts, I'd love to do it. And I love talking real estate. So
yeah, we have loved having you on the show. And, you know, you're not the first person that's been on the show that has shared that their real estate business got them through a significant time of physical illness. I had AJ Osborne on the show. He talked about, you know, he went from fully healthy to paralyzed from the neck down and in a hospital bed for I don't know exactly how long, but it was a long time. And his self-storage business kept his family afloat. So that's why I implore you guys that are listening to this to be proactive in putting your family in a situation financially that if a catastrophe happens, that they're not stuck because your income's gone. So we don't want to live in fear, but that's the reality of life. We don't control what happens to us. We just control our response to it. And you can plan for those rainy days because they will happen. And Charles, I want to thank you for sharing your story. I want to tell you that we're going to be praying for you for your full recovery. Yes, absolutely. And you're welcome to come back anytime. I feel like you have a lot more to share. And I would love to have you come back on a regular basis and share deals you're working on and also help add value to this community. Yeah, this has been a phenomenal episode. Hey, go ahead.
Yeah. One of my goals is, you know, now my job took a lot of my time. It was focused. There's so much there. Now that I've stepped away from it, I want to grow this side of the business. You know, right now I'm focused in improving systems and what I have and just, you know, tightening things up, but I know there's a lot of growth for me in sharing my knowledge and experience with others, and that's something that I want to work with and want to do. If anytime you want to talk a deal with me, you know, I'd love to talk. I don't have to have a share of the deal, but I can certainly give you my opinion and my thoughts on it. But if, you know, there's concepts you guys want to talk about on the show, I'd love to talk about them. Anyway, you know, this has been a big encouragement for me, and because this is kind of a launching out into, you know, how can I grow this aspect of my business, and that's sharing what the Lord has done with me in real estate. And I'd like to share that with others. And so I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, do social media and all those things that I haven't done very well in the past.
So. Well, I appreciate all of your support of my show through the years as well. So thank you for that. Thank you for reaching out and years ago, and thanks for sharing your story today. And I know there's a lot of great things in store for you. And before we go, Charles, tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want to connect.
Yeah. You know, I guess the best way to get with me is through email address is cpopeproperties@gmail.com. Also, I am on Instagram, and I recently signed up for Instagram, so I don't have any content, but I'm working on that. And it's Cpope Properties there as well. But
we'll send you some shorts from this episode. You could post that there. That'll get you going on your content.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you guys. I love your content on your podcast. It's really, really good. And I sincerely say that. And I wish you all the best. And I appreciate what you're doing. And because it is meaningful, it's helpful for people out there that are trying to learn this business. I've benefited from your podcast and many others like it over the years. So keep doing it.
Right back at you, man. Thank you so much for those encouraging words. You've definitely, we've learned a lot from you today, and I know a lot of others will as well. And folks, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to like this episode. If you've made it all the way to the end, I salute you. Like the episode and hit the subscribe button if you haven't. Share it with your friends. Turn the notifications on so you can catch episodes when they come out. We've got shorts coming out daily, a weekly long form episode, evergreen content, podcast episodes, all of that, all with the goal of helping you reach financial freedom through real estate investing. And until next time, peace.